Groovy Greeks and the Rotten Romans. A Horrible Histories book read by Vienna Vets. Two horrible books in one. Read by Terry Deary and Martin Brown. What are you doing in Greece? Just roaming around. The Groovy Greeks. Introduction. History can be horrible. And do you know who to blame? Mr. Popplecrump, my history teacher? No, it's the Greeks. But the ancient Greeks are dead, aren't they? Dunno, was it in the newspapers? Nah, it was years ago. Well, maybe not that long ago. What, before Mr. Popplecrump was born? The Greeks invented history about 2,500 years ago. Yeah, but our teacher still makes us suffer it. Boring. Inventing history is just one of the things we have to thank them for. They had the idea for plays, for the Olympic Games, even the camera. They don't sound as boring as teacher makes them. They sound groovy. Sounds like a good title for a book. Yeah, The Groovy Greeks. Funny you should mention that. Here's a book on the Groovy Greeks. A book that will tell you all the things that teacher doesn't tell you. The things you really want to know. The hilarious stories and the horror stories. Especially the horror stories. Know any good one? Groovy Greek Timeline. B.C. 1600 to 1200. First Greek civilizations ruled by the mighty Mycenaean lords of Crete. Give it one more try, Nikos. About 1118, the siege of Troy. Troy loses to the famous wooden horse trick. About 1100, the state of Sparta starts. The state of Sparta starts here. 776, first recorded Olympic Games. About 750 to 550, Greeks take to the seas and become great traders. About 730, Greeks produce the first works of written poetry in the world. Groovy Homer is the most famous. 640, world's first roof tiles manufactured at Temple of Hera at Olympia. Where's that again? About 600, Charles, the Greek scientist, announced that the entire Earth is actually floating in water. 585, scientist Charles predicts an eclipse of the sun. About 550, first plays performed. King Croesus of Lydia has gold and silver coins made, the first coins with writing on them. What does your coin say? Heads. About 530, Pisistratus of Athens creates a library. About 520, Alcmaeon of Croton finds out about the human body by cutting up dead ones. Groovy, eh? I'm not dead yet. 490, Persians invade Greece, beaten by Greeks at the Battle of Marathon. 486, the first comedy drama at Athens. This comedy is tragic. 480, Xerxes of Persia attacks the Greeks. The Battle of Thermopylae. Spartan heroes die. 460, Athens versus Sparta and Persia. 431 to 404, Athens tries to get too bossy so the others fight the Peloponnesian War. Sparta becomes top dog. 430, Great Plague of Athens kills Athenian leader Pericles, not to mention a quarter of all the Athenian people. I'd rather have the plague than the Spartans. 413, a defeat at Syracuse for the army of Athens followed by 404, the fall of Athens. About 400, Greek army engineers invent the stomach bow, the first type of crossbow. 371, Spartans lose to new top dog, the Thebans. I think I just invented the stomach arrow. Oops, sorry. 336, Alexander the Great becomes king of Macedon when his dad is assassinated. In just 10 years, he conquers the old enemy, Persia. That's it, Alexander. Hold it there, and smile! 330, Aristotle invents the camera obscura, a sort of pinhole camera and the idea behind today's film and television. Now that really was groovy. 323, Alexander the Great dies. His generals divide up his empire. 322, the end of democracy in Athens when the Macedons take over. You always get the best bits. 215, Archimedes invents war machines like the catapult. They keep the Romans out for 3 years. 213, Archimedes has mirrors set along the harbor walls. They dazzle the Romans and set fire to their boats. Romans delayed for a while, but... 212, here come the Romans. How's Greece, dear? A bit flashy for my taste. 136, Greece part of the Roman Empire. AD, 393, Romans abandon Olympic Games. They don't happen again for 1,500 years. Too much running, not enough killing. The Gruesome Gods. Before the Groovy Greeks came, the mighty Mycenaean people who ruled Greece. Their greatest palace was on the island of Crete. It was so posh the queen had the world's first flushing toilet. Then the palaces were wrecked and the Mycenaean way of life went too. No more flushing toilets. What went wrong? Was it an attack from outside? Earthquakes? disease and plague, drought and famine, change of climate, they've all been suggested by historians. But, like the disappearance of the dinosaurs, no one really knows for sure. The Dorian people moved down into Greece. They forgot how to write, so we don't know a lot about those days. Historians call them the Dark Ages. Darn! Halfway through a letter and I've forgotten how to write. So without writing, the history was preserved in stories. And as the years passed, the stories became wilder and more unlikely. Legends, in fact. The Greeks loved horror stories best of all. One Greek writer said that Greek children should not be told stories like this one, just as grown-ups today say you should not watch certain horror films. But this book is a horrible history, and the story has a PG rating. Do not read the story if you suffer from nightmares, or at least read it with your eyes closed so you don't suffer the most gory bits. You have been warned. Bringing up baby. Kronos was the chief god. You'd think that would make him happy, but no. Somebody told him that one of his children would take his place. Can't have that, Kronos complained. Here, Mrs. Kronos, pass me that baby. What for? Never mind, ask questions, just pass me that baby. Mrs. Kronos passed across their newborn child. Here, what you doing over with that baby, she cried. Eating it. Eating it, you great greedy lummock. You've just had your tea. You can't be hungry again already. Need salt. I'm not hungry, the great god growled. Just there's this prophecy about one of my children taking my throne. No kid, no takeover, that's the way I look at it. You don't want to go taking no notice of them hairy scopes. Mrs. Kronos sighed. Don't pay to take chances, is what I always say, Kronos said smugly. Pass them indigestion tablets. Time passed as time does, and Mrs. Kronos had more baby gods. And Kronos ate every last one. Well, not the very last one. Mrs. Kronos was getting fed up with his gruesome guzzling. I'll put a stop to his little game, she smirked as she hid the new baby, Zeus, under her bed. She picked up a big rock, wrapped it in a baby blanket, and dropped it in the cot. In walked Kronos. Where is it? In the cot. Ugly little beggar, isn't he? The head god said, squinting at the boulder. Takes after his father, then, Mrs. Kronos mumbled. Bon appetit, dear. Crunchy as well, her husband said, swallowing teeth. Probably because he's bolder than the rest, Mrs. Kronos agreed. Kronos sat down heavily on a royal couch. Ooh, I think I've eaten someone who disagrees with me. It's possible, Mrs. Kronos sniffed. A lot of people disagree with you, sweetheart. Ooh, the god groaned and clutched his stomach. I think I'm going to be sick. Not on the new carpet, my love. There's a bowl over there, Mrs. Kronos warned him. Kronos gave a heavenly heave and threw up not just a stony snack, but all the other baby gods as well. Just goes to show, Mrs. Kronos smiled happily, you can't keep a good god down. Hi, Dad. And did the young gods grow up to overthrow their dreadful dad? What do you think? Don't feel too sorry for Kronos. He killed his own father, Uranus, and scattered the bits into the oceans. Kronos and the old gods were driven out by Zeus and the new gods. These new gods were much more fun. They were really one big unhappy family, always arguing, fighting, and doing nasty things to each other. Zeus ruled the earth and the sky from his home on the top of Mount Olympus. Of all the groovy gods, Zeus was the grooviest. In a competition, he got the top job. When he wasn't flirting with human women, he was frying somebody with a thunderbolt. Zeus's brother, Poseidon, ruled the sea. A job for a real trip. Old Paws wasn't too happy with this because he was a bad loser. That's why he sulked and went stomping around, whipping up the seas of a fork and creating storms. What a stir. Help! A third brother, Hades, was the real loser. He won the job of ruling the underworld. That must have been hell. Quick quiz. Prometheus, a young god, liked humans, so he stole fire from the gods and gave it to men on Earth. The top god, Zeus, punished men by creating something new and terrible on Earth. What were these terrible things? One woman, two flies, three teachers. Answer, one woman. The Greeks thought they were sly and lying. They attracted men so that men couldn't live with them, without them. At the same time, they were such a nuisance, men couldn't live with them either. Women were a great help when it came to sharing a man's wealth, but no help at all when he was poor. Of course, this legend is utter nonsense. If you don't believe me, then ask any woman. Fight like a Greek. The Wooden Heads of Troy. Everybody knows the story of the Wooden Horse of Troy, but can you believe it? Those Trojan twits saw a wooden horse staying outside the gates of the city. Ooh, look, a wooden horse! What's it doing here? The Greeks must have left it. Why? Dunno, maybe it's a prezzy. That's kind of them. They spend 10 years trying to murder us, then go off and leave us a present. Just to show there's no hard feelings, I suppose. It'll look very nice there outside the walls. I've got a great idea. Why don't we bring it inside the city? We can have it as a sort of statue in the center of the city. Not a lot of wooden statues about. We'll be the first to start a new fashion. Oh, all right, look, it even has wheels on to make it easy. Almost as if the Greeks wanted us to take it into the city. Thoughtful of them, very thoughtful. Or Paris. Don't you think this could be some sort of, well, trick, do you? Mummy did say, beware the Greeks bearing gifts. Nah, your mother never trusted nobody. Here, grab that rope and give us a hand. Everyone thinks it's a wonderful story. No one stops to ask, would the Trojans really be that stupid? But if they did ask that question, the answer would have to be yes. If brains were gunpowder, the Trojans wouldn't have had enough to blow their helmets off. because they were tricked into letting the groovy Greeks into their city a second time. That's right, everyone knows about the wooden horse trick. Teachers forget to tell you about the second one over 800 years later in 360 BC. Tricking a Trojan, again. Charidamus was fed up. He paced up and down in his tent and rubbed a strong hand through his graying hair. He complained, "I'll never capture Troy. The walls are just too strong, and the Trojans don't look as if they're starving to death, do they?" "No, sir," his young lieutenant mumbled. "Perhaps if we made a wooden horse stand..." Charidamus glared at him. "Thank you. You are the 50th person to suggest that. The Trojans won't fall for that old trick again. Next time they'll just set fire to the wooden horse. Would you like to volunteer to sit inside it, eh? See if I'm right?" The young man turned red and said, "No, sir." He was relieved to hear someone approaching the tent. He jumped to the door. "Password?" "Ajax," the man called. The lieutenant opened the flap and said, "Enter, friend." The guard stepped through, pulled on a short chain, and dragged a ragged man through after him. The guard stood to attention. "Spy, sir. Caught him stealing food. Permission to execute him, sir," he barked. General Charidamus peered at the prisoner. The man's clothes were dusty, but quite rich. "Not yet, Captain. Leave us together." The guard saluted and strode out. Charidamus nodded to a cushion. "Sit down," he ordered. "Your name?" The prisoner grinned. "Damon." He was a wiry man with dark eyes that seemed to dart around and couldn't meet anyone else's gaze. "And you've come out from Troy to steal our food? Are things that bad inside the city, then?" Damon smiled slyly. "You Greeks eat better than the Trojans. Even prior to the siege, the king gave us poor rations." "You don't like the king? Then why work for him?" the Greek general asked. The prisoner shrugged. "It's a job." Charidamus leaned forward. "And if I offered you a job? A better paid and better fed job?" Damon looked at his thumb and slowly placed it in his mouth. "I'd be happy to work for you. I'd be loyal to you." The general's eyes were hard as iron as he replied, "Oh, you'd be loyal, Damon. Men who betray me die, but they die very slowly." The prisoner squirmed on his cushion and gave a nervous smile. "What do you want me to do?" "I want you to be my wooden horse, Damon. Listen carefully and I'll tell you exactly what I want you to do." It took a week for Charidamus to prepare the plan. His young lieutenant was nervous. As he tightened the buckle on his general's armor, he asked, "How do you know Damon won't betray us?" The general tested the weight of his short sword. "Damon is greedy, but he's not stupid. He knows that we will take Troy sooner or later. If we have to wait too long to get inside, he knows we'll be angry. We'll certainly kill the Trojan men, including him. But if he helps us, he lives, and doesn't have to go to bed hungry anymore." Charidamus slid the sword into his belt. "Pass me my cloak." The young man took the large, filthy cloak and slid it over his general's wide shoulders. A hood covered the man's square head. He arranged the cloak to cover the weapons, dusted his hands, and gave a nod. "You'll pass as a fair traveler, sir." The lieutenant changed, too. The general strode out of his tent and met a dozen men dressed the same way. No one spoke. Charidamus led the way from the torch-lit camp onto the stony road to Troy. A small man sat quietly on a horse and watched them approach. "Is everything ready, Damon?" the general asked softly. "It is," the small man smiled. He turned his horse and walked slowly back towards the city gates. The Greek soldiers dragged their sandals and began to limp towards the enemy city. "Who goes there?" a guard cried from a gate tower. "Damon," the traitor cried. "Ah, so it is. What have you got with you?" "The Greeks are growing careless. I went to their camp and found some of our captured men with just a single guard. I killed them and brought them back," Damon lied. "But let me in quickly. They're weak and sick." "Aye, Damon. Oh, you better give the password." "Castor," Damon said quickly. The gates creaked slowly open. The man on the horse rode in. The soldiers trudged behind him. As the gates closed, the men stood in the shadow of their wall and shrugged off their cloaks. They climbed the stone stairways to the gate towers and the walls. The Trojan defenders had no chance. They were looking for Greeks outside the walls. They didn't expect the attack to come from within. Charidamus cut the throat of the last guard and let the limp body drop into the dark and dusty ditch that ran outside the wall. The Greeks gathered in the tower above the gate. "Now we wait for the rest of our army," the general began, but his lieutenant hurried to the walls and looked over. There was a rattle of stones on the road as a body of armed men arrived and halted. "They're here, sir, but they're too early," the young man gasped. "Either that or they aren't our men," Charidamus said. "How can we tell in the darkness?" "The password, man, the password. You know, wooden horse." "Quick, challenge them," the general ordered. "Who goes there?" the lieutenant called. "Friend," came the reply. "Give the password." After a moment, a voice called, "Castor!" The Greeks looked at General Charidamus. "Let them in. If we don't, they'll raise the alarm before our men get here. Hide behind the gates. As soon as the last man is in, you come out. Kill them. Kill every last one." The Greeks trotted down the stairs to their positions while the general and his lieutenant turned the winches that opened the gates. There was a sound of marching feet, cries of surprise and fear, the clash of weapons, then the silence of death. From the darkest shadow of the Trojan street, a small man gave a grim smile as he sat astride his horse, a horse that had led the enemy into Troy again. Petrifying plays and electrifying epics. After the stories of gods, there were stories of heroes, men who were almost as powerful as gods. The only difference was they were mortal. They could die. The stories about heroes were told as poems. They were sung in the palaces of ancient Greece. Then, after the Dark Ages, poems were written down. The oldest written poem is by the Greek Homer. His poem, the Iliad, tells the story of the Siege of Troy, a story of the heroes who fought to the death to get Helen back to her hubby, King Menelaus. It was such a great story, it is still told today. The Greeks read the poems read on stage while a group of dancers performed. Then a clever poet called Aeschylus came along and had a great idea. He put a second reader on stage. Now you had a play, the first drama in the world, another groovy Greek invention. Another famous playwright was Euripides, say, Euripides, whose name gave lots of joy to suffering students of Greek. Knock, knock, who's there? Euripides. Euripides who? Euripides trousers, so you better pay for him. Bad. Of course, like everything else in Greece, playwriting became a competition. You went to see which play was the best and would win the prize. But it wasn't like your local theater where you can go and watch a pantomime at Christmas. Greek theater always had the same scenery, was out in the open air, had no actresses, only actors who also played the female parts, had no action on stage, only people talking about the exciting bits. Murders and all that happened off stage. Had the actors wearing face masks and high platform shoes so they moved around very slowly. Okay, in the next scene you have to play short people. There were two types of plays. Serious ones where lots of people died miserably. They were called tragedies. Funny ones full of groovy jokes and rude bits. They were called comedies. Some of their favorite tragedies were about the Trojan War. Several writers told the same story. The skill was to tell it in an interesting way. Playwright Aeschylus didn't write about the fighting at Troy. Homer's poem did that. Aeschylus looked at the story of the women left behind. Women like Clytemnestra, wife of the Greek leader Agamemnon. If Clytemnestra had kept a diary of those exciting years, would it have looked like this? Diary of a murder. Dear diary, you'll never believe what my sister Helen has gone and done. She's run off with that nice young man Paris. She's a sly one, that Helen. Husband Menelaus away from the palace and she claps up young Paris. Disgusting, I call it. You'd never catch me flirting with a guest. Of course, I've got three kids to worry about. I have to set them a good example. Anyway, they reckon she's off to a place called Troy. Still, it's better than Sparta. Nasty brutal place, that Sparta. I always said she'd never stick it off. Out. Troy. There'll be trouble, mark my words. My husband Agamemnon came storming in tonight. Have you heard what your Helen's gone and done now? He says. I've heard. Can't say I blame her. Nice young chap, that Paris. I knew that would upset him. Turned redder than blood on a sacrificial altar. I won't have him saying anything against our Helen. She's always been flighty. I don't mind saying it, but she's my sister, and I won't have anyone else saying a word against her. Nice young chap, he screeches. He was a guest. A guest! He betrayed the trust of Menelaus. Nicked his wife while he was out hunting. No need to shout, I told him. You'll upset Iphigenia, I said, and patted our girl on the head. What's he on about, Mom? Iphigenia asked. Your Auntie Helen's gone off to Troy with that nice Prince Paris, I said. Oh, is that all? She said, and she went back to her sewing. Lovely girl, Iphigenia. Wish our other two, Orestes and Electra, were as good. Funny couple, those two, Orestes and Electra. Anyway, Agamemnon says, there'll be trouble, big trouble. They reckon we'll get 1,000 ships and sail after her. Bring her back. That'll take months, I said. A Greek's gotta do what a Greek's gotta do, he said. Now let me have a bit of supper, then I'll be off to organize the army. Organize the army, I said. Don't tell me you're going as well. Going? Going? I'm leading the whole expedition. Menelaus is my brother, after all. That's Agamemnon all over. Getting into somebody else's fight. Just an excuse to go off and have a battle. Leaves me stuck here for months on end. It would serve him right if I did what Helen did and found myself a toy boy. That would teach him. In fact, I've had my eye on that. I just thus for a while now. But no, our Iphigenia would be upset. I'll just let Agamemnon get on with it. I hope he gets seasick. Autumn. I'll kill him. I will kill Agamemnon. You'll not believe what he's done. If I had a sword in my hand, I'd have killed him then, there and then. But he's gone now. I'll just have to wait. If it takes 6 months or 6 years till he gets back, I'll have my revenge. I'll have his blood, I will. I'll never forgive him. I know he had problems. 1,000 ships waiting to sail to Troy, and they couldn't know even get out of the harbor at Aulis. The wind kept blowing them back, week after week. Of course, I knew that they went to the oracle to ask for advice, but I never did find out what the oracle told them. Very quiet he was when he came back. Well, what's to do, I asked. Oh, a sacrifice, he muttered. Just a sacrifice, and the gods will turn the wind around. That's all right, then. What is it, a sheep, a deer? He muttered something and started to leave the room. What was that, I said. I'm not going deaf. I swear he didn't want me to hear. Or a maiden. We have to sacrifice a maiden, he said, ashamed-like. Agamemnon, you're never going to kill a little girl just to get that useless trollop Helen back, are you? A Greek's gotta do? Yeah, what a Greek's gotta do. I know I think it's a wicked shame. I just feel sorry for the lass's mother, that's all. Aye, he said sheepish-like and flipped out. I was so upset. I have to say I was upset at the thought of them brutes slaughtering a young girl just to keep some god happy. So I sent for a little Iphigenia to clear me up. Her nurse was nailed as a marble statue in a collar. "Iphigenia's gone for the sacrifice," she said. "Gone to the sacrifice," I cried. "She's too young to go watching horrible things like that. She'll be upset. And I'll put her off for dinner. She's a fussy eater at the best of times," I said. "No," the nurse mumbled. "She won't be having any dinner anymore. Iphigenia's gone for the sacrifice." "She is the sacrifice," the poor woman explained. I was speechless. That double-crossing filthy rat of a husband had a little girl killed on an altar just so we could go off and play soldiers. Of course, the winds turned and he set sail before I could get my hands on him. Left me first with a funny couple, Orestes and Electra, to bring up. But I can wait. Oh, I can wait. The waiting will just make it all the nicer when I finally get him. But believe me, I'll get him. If he doesn't get killed at Troy, he'll get killed when he gets back home. I can wait. 5 years later. It's not as easy taking Troy as I expected. Their little game of soldiers isn't as exciting as I thought. Sitting outside the walls of Troy every day, they must be bored out of their tiny minds. I was bored myself. But now I've got that nice, sensible Aegisthus to keep me company, sensible enough not to go to Troy. It'll serve Agamemnon right if he gets killed, but now I've got Aegisthus to help me. It's certainly old fool will be killed if he ever gets home. I've now got two reasons to get rid of him. I still haven't forgotten Iphigenia. As for the funny couple, they're as strange as ever. Sometimes I think they don't love their mother at all. That's fine, because I don't think much of them either. Another 5 years later. So he's home, the conquering hero's home. Couldn't beat the Trojans in a fair fight, so he beat them with a trick horse or something. His soldiers inside a wooden horse, they say. Typical sneaky trick from Agamemnon. Poor Helen's back with Menelaus, and everybody's happy. Except me. And the Trojans, of course. I pretended to welcome Agamemnon back like a loving wife, didn't I? But it was difficult when that girl stepped forward. "This is Cassandra," he said. "Cassandra, isn't she the king of Troy's daughter?" "She is, and she is my wife to be," he smirked. "You've got a wife? You've got me! Cassandra will be my second wife," he said, and marched into the palace. That scrawny girl trailed after him. They say she has the gift of prophecy. In that case, she knows that we're going to kill her, too. I could see it in her eyes. She knows. She knows. Next day. "It's done. He's dead." We waited till he climbed into his bath. I walked in with the sword. I could have struck him from behind, but I wanted him to know what was going to happen, just as Iphigenia might have known 10 years ago. I just finished him off. It was messy. Cassandra was in her room, waiting, as if she expected me. Perhaps she did. She didn't cry out or try to run away. She just closed her eyes and bowed her head. It was harder than killing him in a way. Still, it's over now. Oh yes, Electra and Orestes, the funny people, have had their heads together, hatching some kind of plot. They can't do anything. It's against every law of God or man to kill your own mother. I'm safe. Dear Diary, it is against every law of God and man to kill your husband, and the gods would want us to avenge our father's death. We killed her and her murdering lover, Aegisthus. Now we aren't the judgment of the god for our crime. Orestes and Electra. The gods decided to destroy Orestes and Electra for killing their mother and sent the Furies after them, sort of avenging angels.